Welcome to the Road Ahead Cafe. Hang on to your hat and enjoy the ride, because you're about to get some powerful insights and practical hacks that will take your daily life to the next level. And now, here are your hosts, Rick, Frank, and Peter.
Welcome back to the Road Ahead Cafe. I'm your host, Rick Gabrielli, and I am here with change facilitator Frank Vandenhorst and the mindful pathfinder Peter M. Fellows. And this week, we're going to share a bit about our journey, three personal stories from three personable guys. Peter, can you give us an idea of what you'll be sharing today?
Yeah, thanks, Rick. Back again and ready to begin another session of mental, emotional, and spiritual sharing that will provide you, our audience, with three courses of a breakfast for champions. And for the appetizer today, I have a question for you, because I can't quite figure this out. Do you think that at a deeper non-conscious level, we already know about some of what's going to happen to us in the future? And if we do, do you think this means that what happens to us is predestined? I'll share with you a strange and wonder-filled dream that seemed to predict my first meeting with my wife, Jeannie, and you tell me what you think. Coming right up in this episode 31 of the Road Ahead Cafe. Rick?
Good stuff, Peter. Thank you. Frank, what are you going to talk about today?
Thanks, Peter. As usual, a wonderful introduction. A dear friend of me has Parkinson's disease. Parkinson's disease is a brain disorder that leads to shaking, stiffness, difficulty with walking, balance, and coordination. The Parkinson's symptoms usually begin gradually and get worse over time. As the disease progresses, it also leads to feelings of depression and anxiety. No fun, one could say. How do you deal with your own feelings when you see someone slowly deteriorating? A question I asked myself, and I'll tell you what I did. Rick, over to you.
Wow. It's heavy, Frank. So today I'm going to be sharing a little bit about accepting endings and releasing resistance, making room for new beginnings. I'm going to talk about Carol. I'm going to talk about my two boys. And I'm going to talk about the past 2 years when my turn comes up. Peter, you want to go a little deeper?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Rick. Before I regale you with this story, which I call I Dream of Jeannie, my wife, in the interest of full disclosure, let me tell you that since the early 70s, I have been interested in psi. That's PSI. It's the cool scientific name for all things psychic. And I did know Jeannie, my wife, was a psychic when I married her. I wasn't blindsided by that, like in the old TV series, Bewitched, where Darren marries Samantha, who turns out to be a witch. But I hadn't considered when I married her what it would actually mean day to day living with a psychic. Like one time when we were living in Toronto, I had gone to London to attend an event and I'd promised to call Jeannie at 6 p.m. But this blonde lady stopped me to ask me to analyze some handwriting, graphology. And when I called Jeannie, it must have been about, I don't know, 10 past six. Her first words were, "Who is the blonde lady you were with?" Side note, for anybody born after 1990s, there were no smartphones, internet, micro cameras, Apple trackers. She should not have known that I was talking to a blonde lady 10 minutes before. And forget about Christmas gifts, because I'd pretty much given up trying to surprise her for Christmas gifts. And then I had an idea and I decided to go shopping for just one gift that she would not be able to guess ahead of time. And as I wandered around this amazing flea market, I kept my mind open and I saw a foot massager. And I thought, you know, she wouldn't expect that. Maybe I'll get her the foot massager. And I kept looking and I saw a crystal ball on like this dragon display. I mean, it was really cool. I thought, oh, yeah, that might be a good choice. Should I get the foot massager or should I get the crystal ball? So when I got home, I got the crystal ball. I wrapped it up so you couldn't tell. And I said, you're never going to guess what I bought you. And she says, a foot massager? And I go, no, it wasn't a foot massager. I don't know where you get that from. A crystal ball? So I don't try to surprise her at all. But I think that my meeting Jeannie for the first time wasn't a total surprise for me on some deeper level, because almost, I don't know, maybe about 6 months before I met her for the first time, I had a dream which seemed to predict that I would meet her. And if I'm right, does that mean that my meeting was predestined? I don't know. I want you guys to tell me what you think. So it's 1978. I'm single. I'm living on my own in the city of Ottawa, ground floor apartment of a duplex on Irving Avenue. I just discovered a little known phenomenon of lucid dreaming. A lucid dream is one in which you realize that you're dreaming so you can choose what you want to do. But I'd never heard of this experience, and nobody else seemed to either. The university I called, the sleep lab, they'd never heard of it. So I was like a dream alchemist or magician or something, and I'm burning the midnight oil, trying to figure out how can I have another lucid dream. So I'm having this ordinary dream, and I'm standing outside my duplex in the dream on Irving Street when I realized I'm dreaming. And I'm really excited. I've succeeded in having a lucid dream. And because my progress is difficult, though, I thought maybe if I could contact a dream character who would represent that inner, more knowing portion of myself, I'd get guidance on how to induce dreams and navigate dreams. It seemed like a great idea. So in the dream, I close my eyes, my dream eyes, and I call upon my inner guide. When I open my eyes again, there's this woman standing in front of me as real and as present as you are now. She wasn't quite the ethereal classic goddess of wisdom archetype I was expecting. She looked kindly, but kind of pedestrian. In fact, she looked like an older local female politician whom my parents had voted for years before. Her name was Jean Wads. That's Exhibit A, folks. Spiritual guide named Jean Wads, initials JW. But I didn't care what she looked like because I was just over the moon to finally have someone I could meet with in my dreams and talk about how I tried to become awake in those dreams. So we walked down Irving Avenue. And as I'm talking to her, there's like a little voice in my head that says, check for the scar on her forehead. This is exhibit number two. A scar on JW's forehead. But I didn't bother looking or checking because I didn't know what the heck that was about. I'm talking to my inner guide here. I'm busy. We reached the end of the street, Irving Avenue, at Wellington Street. A driver pulls his car over and asks us, where's the Ministry of Transport? And I'm kind of annoyed because I'm trying to have a conversation with my inner guide. And here comes this guy asking for directions. But I remembered it was my spiritual guide, so I tried to be cool and just said, look up the address, which was kind of mean because in the dream, I knew the place he wanted was just a little further down Wellington Street. And in reality, in 1978, it really was located down there. Exhibit three, a guy in a car asked me where the Ministry of Transport is and when he's driving by Irving Street at Wellington. So I went back to my inner guide and I noticed that now we were walking into a hotel lobby and somehow I knew this is a Toronto hotel lobby, even though I had never actually been in a Toronto hotel. So the fourth exhibit, JW and I in a Toronto hotel. And I see the same guy who asked me for directions. He's in the hotel. Fifth exhibit, direction asking guy is in Toronto with me. Dream ends. I wake up. I'm all excited. It's wonderful. By the way, if you're interested in what I actually said to the guide and what was said back to me, you have to get a copy of my book, Benevolent Synchronicity and the Psychic Self, not to be confused with Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. That's a different story. So about 6 months later, my business partner, Ian, suggests we drive down to Toronto to attend a function to sell our line of meditation recordings. And I met my future wife there in the hotel. Her name was not Jean Wads. It was Jean Warrington. JW. Turns out she has a small scar on her forehead at the hairline. Ian, of course, was there. He drove us there. And on the trip home, as we drive down Wellington past the bottom of Irving Avenue, he says to me, do you know where the Ministry of Transportation is? Five highly specific related elements in the dream about a half a year before it happened. What do you think? Is it evidence of precognition? And if it is, does that mean things are predestined? I don't know, but I think that it's at least suggestive to me that at a deeper non-conscious level, the part of us I call your pathfinder knows far more than we know at the conscious level. And that's why in mindful pathfinding, we turn to that inner source of guidance for help when we need it. Want to hear how mindful pathfinding can level up any real situation or problem you face? Check out the resources available for you mindfulpathfinding.com. But don't check them out yet. Rick and Frank are here to serve you with this week's main course and dessert. Rick?
Wow. Great story, Peter. Whew. That is great. Frank, tell us about your story.
I thought, now, well, the judge will say, where's the verdict? I mean, but anyway, there was a nice ending. Great story, Peter. Okay, it was about 5 o'clock in the afternoon that my phone rang. I looked at the screen and I saw it was Nancy. I answered and said, "Hi, Nance, how are you doing?" It was silent for a moment, and then I heard her crying. "I'm feeling so bad," she said. "My legs are hurting, I'm shaking all over, and I can't make dinner. Do you want me to come over?" I said. "Do you have time?" Nancy asked. "I make time," I said. "I'll be at your place in half an hour, if that's okay with you." "Yes, please," she hung up. I canceled my online meeting and drove to her place. It wasn't the first time I would come over to help her. I was glad to do that, and she allowed me to be helpful. Accepting my help, and that of other friends, of course, didn't come naturally to her. The acknowledgement that you cannot be self-supporting anymore in the way you used to be when she was less ill was very, very difficult for her. It didn't simply fit her character. While driving to her apartment, I wondered how I would deal with such a situation. Feeling sorry for myself? Feeling a victim, maybe? Could I allow others to help me? How long would I hold on to "I do it myself" attitude? It remained silent in my head. No answers came up. Maybe the answer will come if I'm in such a situation as she was, I thought. While parking my car, I felt an immense gratitude for my health. I turned off the engine and closed my eyes for a moment and to tune into my body. I felt a kind of warm, supportive flow running through my whole system. "Thank you, thank you, thank you," I said to myself. "Thank you for my health." Then the soft voice I recognize quite well, my inner guide, says, "You are supported, always, my friend." I went out of the car and to her apartment. And when I came to her apartment, she was sitting on the couch. "Oh my God," I thought, "you look bad and exhausted." While greeting her, I smiled and walked over to her. We held hands and talked for a while, and I started to make some dinner. And she was enjoying the food. She became a bit more cheerful, and that was great. But later, worry kicked in. "What is my future, Frank?" she said. She knew her situation would get worse in due time. I didn't know what to say. We sat in silence. And before I knew it, I said, "Can you be grateful for something in your life right now?" "Well," she said, "well, that I'm still alive and can see my two lovely, lovely sons and go out in the park." And well, she mentioned a few things. "That's something," I said with a smile. "But what about your body? I mean, I can still move around, eat well, that my mind is still working good. Indeed, there's nothing wrong with that mind, razor sharp as usual." I took a piece of paper and we started to make a list of all things she was grateful for. "Wow, that's a lot of things," she said, looking at the list we made. "It makes me feel so much better now we've wrote them down," and gave me a kiss. "Thanks, Frank, for this," she said. I cleaned up the kitchen. We talked a bit. I hugged her and went back to my car and drove home. "Gratitude is the attitude," I said to myself. Rick, over to you.
Beautiful. Whew, boy, you had me holding my breath there, Frank. That was powerful, man. Beautiful story. Thank you for sharing. So what I want to share today is a little bit about this accepting the endings, and, you know, kind of relates a little bit to, you know, what Frank said. And so as a husband, I'm observing Carol in the last couple of years. My oldest son moved out, got engaged, got his own apartment. So first son leaves the house. A lot of emotions there. Joy that he goes and lives on his own, but also the challenge and the sorrow of him leaving the nest. And the first one leaving is always traumatic. And I'm a little bit more, well, that's good. That's what he's supposed to do. Carol, on the other hand, as a mom, wow, you know, that was so hard for her. So life after active parenting, what does that look like? And so this first ending, although we've had endings, right? Everybody does. This one was a big one when that first child leaves the home. So, you know, we're working on it. We have a second son. So we're, you know, thinking about him, and he goes off to college, and he just left last week for his last semester of senior year in college. And he has informed us that he wants to travel and do an online master's program. So come May, he may not come back home. He might leave and go to traveling. So that leaves us with the real empty nest. So as you all have experienced, anyone who's watching or listening, we've all had endings. And so how do we accept those, and how do we move on from those as a father, as a mother, as a husband or wife or partner, a friend, a sibling? So for me, finding the things that you love in yourself, in your own life, what lights you up? It could be a hobby. It could be something that you do in the way of learning, maybe taking on some new experiences, service. You know, we all talk about serving. One of the goals of this podcast is to serve and to give people a way out, an education, or a way in, as Peter so eloquently puts it. And so I was actually sent an article on this term, radical acceptance. And the description of it is the willingness to experience ourselves and our lives as is. So what does this mean? What is radical acceptance? What is accepting? And in the article, the author went on to say, is this giving up? Is this giving in? Is this accepting defeat? That I'm just going to embrace this horrible pain that I feel, or this loss, or this trauma, and this ending? Because we're not good with endings. So I started to think about it in my own life, and the same thing kept coming up. Whenever I felt the potential of an ending coming, I focused on something else, as Frank put it. Maybe it's something to be grateful for. Maybe it's something to focus on, something to find a piece of me that loves this or finds passion in it, or maybe enthusiasm. I wrote, what lights you up? So hopefully, if you're facing any endings today, we all are, maybe you can think about something that lights you up and find a new beginning in that. Peter, what are your final thoughts?
Yeah, my thought is, I think you and Frank are right on about this sort of stuff. I like to say to the audience, if you've been following our podcast, then I believe that you can predict that you'll always find a pearl of wisdom or two when you come and join us each week here at the Road Ahead Cafe. And if you'd rather enjoy us live, then contact us for live events, or virtual or in person, for you, your group, or your business. My best to you, Rick.
Thank you, Peter. Frank, any final thoughts on your story?
Gratitude is the attitude, I said to myself when driving home. Whatever causes distress in your life, being grateful is a wonderful way to feel less stressed. Mm. It won't solve everything in an instant or at once, but it's a great start.
Yeah.
Because as Rick just said, it's more than only acceptance. It's embracing life. Do you want to know more? Contact me on LinkedIn or get to the website, Frank Wise, mgmuseum.nl. Or, of course, and maybe even better, contact the three of us at roadaheadcafe.com. We are very happy to meet you and to talk to you. As always, what you think about and think about, you bring about. Have a wonderful day and don't forget to subscribe. Thanks.
Good stuff, Frank. Thank you. So my final thoughts, learning to be happy with what you have on the way to what you want can be very good for your soul. We're here to help you practice it. Thank you for joining us today for the Road Ahead Cafe. Remember, if you like us, subscribe. If you love us, make a quick selfie video right now to tell us why. Don't be shy. We look forward to getting together with you again next week. Until then, savor your day today.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Road Ahead Cafe. Hungry for more? Don't miss out. Follow this channel and be sure to subscribe to our email at theroadaheadcafe.com. Thank you for stopping by. See you next time.